You look at that river flowing by. You notice the leaves rustling with the wind. You hear the birds. You hear the tree frogs. In the distance, you hear a cow. You feel the grass. The mud gives a little bit on the riverbank. It's quiet. It's peaceful. And all of a sudden, it's a gear shift inside of you. It's like taking a deep breath and going, oh, yeah, I forgot about this. Sounds like it could be from Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, but it's the opening scene of An Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore. And I think Al Gore captures perfectly the sensation that deep breathing can create of being able to stop and reconnect with something we'd forgotten. One could easily believe that Al Gore would need the time to stop and let himself slow down and stop thinking about his own personal problems and those of the world. Later in the movie, Gore tells a story about looking at environmental records with his mentor, Roger Revelle. And they both note that carbon dioxide levels have been rising in Earth's atmosphere for the past several decades. So it's around 70 or early 80, I believe. But Gore also noticed that within each yearly cycle, carbon dioxide levels would rise and fall again and rise and fall again, despite the consistent upward trend. Well, Revelle explained to Al Gore that the Earth itself was breathing. Every spring and summer in the Northern Hemisphere, where most of the Earth's landmass is, the oxygen levels rise, and in the winter, oxygen levels fall, and the opposite happens for carbon dioxide levels. So I found this to be a fascinating and surprisingly moving part of the film. As we learn more about our environment, our world, our universe, we find out that it's more like us than we realized. At any rate, Al Gore does have plenty to think about, like all of us, but he also finds that being quiet and listening to the sounds of nature can help our heart to slow down, our minds to quiet, and our breath to deepen. As Gore notes, nature is the catalyst for this physiological response, but in reality, we can become connected with our breath at any time, and in so doing, feel more connected to our own nature and to nature itself. And we can do this whether we're in an idyllic pastoral setting or in a sterile windowless cubicle. I first became interested in breathing years ago while going to school in Eugene, Oregon. I was a bit of a mess at the time. I was nervous, anxious, worried about various life situations. I hate to think what I'd been like had I been taking calculus in pre-med instead of art and theater classes. I found out that the PE department was offering a meditation class, and I knew I needed to take it so I could learn to relax and slow down a bit. I took the class with my painter buddy, Tom, who was looking for an easy PE credit and was one person who didn't need any help relaxing. Meditation class met in the wrestling gym with a wall-to-wall wrestling mat and a picture of the University of Oregon Fighting Duck up on the wall. I had an aversion to wrestling ever since high school when I had a bad case of callous shoulder blades, and I was ill at ease in that room. During the first session, the teacher, Marjorie Woollacott, gave a lecture about the breath and our lungs, and then she played a tape of a sitar to help us as we tried to meditate. I was at a loss. I'd heard that meditation could help you calm down. Why was she sitting here talking about our lungs? And as we left, my friend Tom said, well, that might have been kind of relaxing if there wouldn't have been that construction going on in the other room. He'd mistaken the sound of the sitar for a construction site. So we both kind of missed a point, which puts me in the mind of a joke. There are a couple of tadpoles swimming along, and they come across this old geezer of a frog up on a lily pad, and he has these big, long, white whiskers. And he looks down at him, and he says, well, hey, boys, how's the water? And the two little tadpoles look up and go, fine, great. And then they swim away. And a while later, one tadpole looks over at the other one and says, hey, what the heck is water? So like the two tadpoles, oxygen was all around us, but we had no idea what it was. But despite our initial misgivings, it turned out to be an amazing class. Marjorie, who was no frog, gave short lectures on living well and on keeping good company, both important ideas to keep our minds from having regrets later, which helps us to more easily live in the present moment. We practiced a few simple yoga postures, which I immediately liked, Yoga, I've come to realize, is almost all about moving your body in ways that help us to breathe more efficiently. It does this both by making it impossible not to take a deep breath, like when you do a chest opener, or by putting yourself in some sort of constricting position and breathing deeply anyway into areas of your lungs that don't usually get fresh air. So we also chanted Hindu mantras to the sound of her harmonium, training our lungs to sing long, sustained notes and our minds to focus. We sat and listened to our breathing. She quoted Thich Nhat Hanh and other religious scholars at length. And she told one story in particular that has always stuck with me, even though I've never found out where she got it or been able to find it in print. Here goes. A young mahout, an elephant herder, has to take his beast through the village market every day to get to the forest where they do their work of gathering wood. At first, it's kind of an ordeal to get through this bustling market because it's full of all kinds of shops and stands, and the elephant has this great appetite and a very curious trunk, and he wants to reach out and grab everything he sees, so he's eating fruit like crazy. It's like a bad combination of a bull in a china shop and a kid in a candy store. The elephant was very disruptive to the vendors in the market, and they were very angry with the mahout, and after having a few of his day's wages devoured, and after being threatened with a severe beating, he decided he had to do something. So he trained the elephant to hold a feather in its trunk up in front of its face, right between its eyes. And at first, the elephant still notices things in the periphery of his vision, but as the mahout continues to train him, he finds that it's easier and easier to focus on the feather right in front of him, even when he's marching by a stand of mangoes fresh off the tree. This has always struck me as a great metaphor for how we live. We have a very powerful entity, our mind, at our disposal. But if we don't focus our mind, it can do more harm than good. Even something very powerful can be harnessed by something as light as a feather, our breath. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, quite a lot of our thinking is useless. I allowed that little elephant of my mind to grab any yummy or icky idea I had and run amok with it. Mostly, he was hanging his trunk in shame at things that had already happened or trumpeting nervously about something that might happen later. The past is gone. The future is not yet here. If we do not go back to ourselves in the present moment, we cannot be in touch with life. And our breath is a great way of returning to the present moment. So it's easy to say that we should return regularly to our breath, but what about people who find breathing deeply uncomfortable or difficult? What about people who have metaphorically had the wind knocked out of them? It's not such a different sensation than the real thing. Many people are not using the full capacity of their lungs. An inefficient breather may be drawing in only 20 to 50% of their lung capacity. They'll probably breathe through their mouth. They may hold their breath periodically without realizing it, causing them to gasp or sigh when they do realize they need to breathe again. They may hyperventilate, breathing short, shallow breaths, only into their upper chest. And this kind of shallow, fast breathing reduces carbon dioxide in our bloodstream, which causes blood vessels to constrict, which slows down the flow of blood and oxygen to your brain and body. Like our planet, these blood gas levels need to be in balance. If this is not just an occasional state, it can have serious physiological and psychological effects. If a person stays deprived of oxygen for an extended time, they become fearful, confused, anxious, tense, and irritable. Severe cases of chronic oxygen deprivation have led to anxiety, road rage, and voting Republican. Lack of oxygen activates the body's fight or flight response. It's an exhausting and emotionally draining way to live. An efficient breather, on the other hand, breathes through their nose, which slows down their exhalations and allows their lungs to extract more oxygen from each breath. They breathe into their entire rib cage and their belly and their whole torso, in fact, which makes their whole body more at ease and relaxed. Complete exhalations activate the body's relaxation response. All in all, an efficient breather is calmer, more clear-headed, and probably healthier and happier than one who is inefficient. So now that I've talked about how efficient breathing can help us, let's try a little exercise in it. Yep, that's right. So sit tall, put your feet on the floor, breathe deep. If you find yourself slumped over and you have a flexible arm, go ahead and place it behind your back and just press it against your back and move your chest forward. Or just lift your sternum up towards the ceiling and press your sit bones down towards the chair you're sitting on. So begin to slowly inhale and exhale, focusing on your breath. Try to breathe in and out through your nose and slightly constrict the back of your throat so that you're making a soft whispering sound on both the inhalation and the exhalation. If you have trouble creating that sound, whisper the word to yourself and then close your lips around that sound. You want it to be audible, at least to yourself. Now, to make sure that you're breathing deeply and exhaling completely, as you take that breath in, first take that breath deep into your belly and let your belly expand forward, away from your spine. Let your belly move forward. And let that inhalation then move up into your lower rib cage, letting your rib cage expand from side to side, from back to front, from bottom to top. And then let your upper chest finally lift and move forward as you complete that inhalation. And then as you exhale, let your belly move back towards your spine. Let your rib cage contract around the breath. And let your upper chest move back and down. So let this process continue to repeat itself as naturally as possible, but with gentle encouragement from you to both deepen the inhalations and lengthen the exhalations. And as you focus on the sound of your breathing and the sensation of your breathing, imagine that you're on a cliff overlooking the ocean. And you're just observing those waves rolling in against the shore and rolling back out to rejoin the ocean. And breathing this way always reminds me of another story about this wise man is walking along the beach and he comes across this little boy who's sitting there with a cup and crying. And he asks the little boy why he's crying. And the little boy says, because I'll never be able to put the whole ocean into my cup. I'll never be able to do it. And the wise man says, why not just throw your cup into the ocean? And this little boy has this moment of enlightenment. So, can it be just coincidence that our breath sounds so much like the ocean? Or is our breath a reflection, an echo of the sounds of the natural world around us? I would say that when we return to our true nature, we really are returning to the earth itself, to the cellular memory, of our origins in the earth. Michael Dowd, in his book, Thank God for Evolution, talks about every constituent part in the universe being complete in itself, but also a reflection of the whole. He also describes various parts of the earth, comparing them to the vital functions of a living organism. Earth's physical structure, its core, mantle, and crust, and continents, is the skeleton or frame for life at the largest scale that we know. The soil is a massive digestive system on which land-based ecologies depend. The oceans, waterways, and rain function as the circulatory system. They transport the blood that nourishes the body of life. Photosynthetic bacteria, algae, and land plants serve as the planet's lungs, ever regenerating the life-giving properties of Earth's atmosphere. I would say that when we come back to our breath, our true nature, we are literally coming back to the one nature we all share. I believe our breath is as good a way of any as learning about the many mysteries of the universe and the ties that bind us to it. as any. As Mary Oliver says, someday perhaps we will learn all there is to learn, what the world is, for example, and what it means. Well, whether or not we ever do discover all there is to know about the universe, I believe that we will find it's both expanding and contracting.